Please stand by. Good day, and welcome to the National Immigration Forum press call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Kathleen Farrell. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Kathleen Farrell, Communications Director of the National Immigration Forum. In September, the Trump administration announced an end by March 5, 2018, to the program known as DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a program that has protected some 800,000 young undocumented people from deportation and has allowed them to work, study, and in many cases provide for their families. The end of DACA means that a significant number of young people are already at risk of deportation, and that number will begin to increase sharply early in the new year, unless Congress passes a permanent legislative solution that addresses Dreamers in a constructive, compassionate way. Today, we are fortunate to have with us on this call evangelical leaders as well as a beneficiary of DACA. With that, let me turn to our first speaker, Travis Wusso, Vice President for Public Policy and General Counsel for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. Please go ahead, Travis.
Thanks. As an organization, ULC has been and remains deeply concerned about the 800,000 Dreamers who are talented, hardworking kids who are full of potential and promise but are living in a state of uncertainty and insecurity. As we all know, the termination of the DACA program proved that a durable solution for this special category of immigrants requires congressional action. Southern Baptists fundamentally believe that we must provide a fair and just solution for these young men and women, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it accords with biblical principles. Organizationally, we have a broad agenda, and we think of this agenda kind of in four categories. First, we work on issues related to human dignity. Second, matters of family and marriage. Third, issues of religious liberty. And fourth, issues of justice. And for us, this is one of those rare issues that really lights up all four of those categories, and that's part of what drives our interest in this discussion today and in this issue. This is a justice issue for us because the Bible is clear that we don't hold children responsible for the actions of their parents. And however we want to characterize the actions of their parents, what they did, what we know for sure is that these children were minors, and the Bible is clear that we don't hold children accountable for these kinds of decisions. But this is also a human dignity issue because every person, regardless of ethnicity, national origin, or any other tribal line or barrier, is an image bearer of God. In 2011, the Southern Baptist Convention issued a resolution in Phoenix, Arizona on immigration. One of the lines from that says, "The scriptures call us in imitation of God himself to show compassion and justice for the sojourner and the alien among us." How we treat this category of immigrants, and all immigrants for that matter, reveals what we believe about them as image bearers of God. Third, ULC views this as a family issue because we believe that American policy should promote the flourishing of families. All of these Dreamers came here because of their families, and many of them now have families of their own and are providing for these families. And we believe that we need to be able to step back and look at this immigration policy, and again, any policy, and say, top to bottom, this policy is pro-family. And finally, this issue raises religious liberty concerns because we know many churches are concerned or uncertain about how they can lawfully care for their immigrant neighbors. Next week marks 3 months since the administration announced the termination of this program. We have 3 months left to come up with a solution. And, you know, in the number of meetings that we've had on this issue, we know that there's broad consensus among Republicans and Democrats that we need a legislative solution. It's now the end of November. Congress has a lot to do. And I think, you know, we and a number of others are concerned that there are a lot of competitors to the oxygen needed to come to a solution. But right now, there are at least six bills that have been introduced to address this category of immigrants. There's several other packages and legislative texts that are working on that are public. And what we believe is that there are enough good ideas floating around to come to a solution that can pass and be signed by the president. So we're calling on members of Congress for leadership and for the White House, as we have been over the last several months, that it is time for us to finally serve our Dreamer neighbors well and not let this opportunity slip away. It's time for us to let them be afforded the opportunity to call the place that they've always called home.
Thanks very much, Travis. Our next speaker is Dr. Walter Strickland, First Vice President of the Southern Baptist Convention. Please go ahead, Dr. Strickland.
Thank you very much. I am grateful to be on the call this morning to voice my concern for the nearly 800,000 immigrants who find themselves in a place of uncertainty and insecurity as a result of action that is not their own. Followers of Jesus are called to do justly and love mercy. This means that standing on the side of dreamers is the job of Christians who are looking to do justice. Dreamers, those who were brought to the United States as children, call America their home. And there are people who, by good faith, willingly submitted themselves to criminal screenings to remain those who are contributing to our society. DACA has provided these 800,000 young people with a means to educate and support themselves, and in many cases, support their families as well. It would be wrong to deprive these young people of the opportunity to support or to develop their fullest potential here in this country. Many dreamers, as I just said a moment ago, call the United States home, much like myself. I grew up in Chicago. I was born in Chicago, but moved to Southern California at the age of six. But as a product of the Southern California school system, I do always call California my home. And so we must protect these young families these young people who we now call our neighbors and our friends and members of our churches, those who are in our military and the like. So we must protect them and their families because family is a top priority for the Christian. Just a week or so ago, I was in Boston for a conference, and my Uber driver was a dreamer. And he is doing what we would hope that many young 20-year-olds would do, is work hard to put themselves through school for the purpose of actualizing the American dream. And although his family has since returned to Brazil, he remained because he thought there was a life for him to be had here. And so I was encouraged by him, by his audacity, by his courage to remain and to work hard and to continue to contribute in profound ways to our society. So with the twin Christian convictions of, on the one hand, upholding the law, and on the other hand, promoting human flourishing, I join the ranks of many others to advocate for Congress to provide long-term protections for these valuable assets to our country. So I respectfully call our legislators to pass legislation to protect these young people and to keep our families intact and to keep our communities and churches strong and intact as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Strickland. And our final speaker today is Jose Ocampo, who is an evangelical Christian, a DACA recipient, and a student at Wingate University in North Carolina. Jose, please go ahead.
Good morning. First of all, I just want to say I'm grateful for being here and given the opportunity to have a platform to be a voice for myself and for other dreamers in the country. A little bit about myself. I was born in Guerrero, Mexico, a small little town called Buenavista de Cuellar. And when I was 2 months old, my parents brought me to this country. I'm now 22. The end of December, I'll be 23. And like most dreamers, or the majority of all dreamers, actually, this is my home. I've been living in Charlotte, North Carolina now for close to 23 years. This is all I've ever known. My parents came, and they sacrificed everything to give myself and my brother, who is also a DACA recipient, the opportunity to come and have not only educational, but economic stability that we know we probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to have back in Mexico. Now, again, I arrived from Mexico when I was 2 months, so I don't know anything about Mexico. I know just what my parents tell me, but all I have ever come to know is Charlotte, North Carolina, and America. I found out at a very young age that I was undocumented, roughly around early middle school, late elementary school, but it wasn't until my sophomore year of high school that I really found out the severity of my situation. At the time, I was on my way to I was a recipient for the Bill Gates Scholarship, and I went to one of their seminars where they gave out information and basically let us know what the qualifications were to receive the scholarship. And I went at the end of toward the end of the seminar when they were getting close to the FAFSA portion of the seminar and how we needed to apply for it. The very last thing that they said is that you must be a U.S. citizen and you must have lawful status. And at that moment, that's when it really hit me. That's when I truly understood what my situation was. I looked over at my mom, looked over at my brother, and they kind of just had this very serious look in their face. My mom didn't really want to make much eye contact with me, and I, at that point I understood why. You know, that was very heartbreaking for me. That was a moment of, it was a blow to my morale, knowing that I had worked so hard, and at that moment I couldn't really do anything to receive, you know, this opportunity to continue on to after high school. But towards the end of my junior year, now going on senior year, I did apply for DACA. That's when DACA 2012 or early 2013 is when I applied for it. Receiving it in March of 2013, my dreams of going to college were officially realized. You know, at that point, they had become a reality for me. I went straight into applying for a job. My first job was a Quick Trip, a small gas station near my house. And then I went to a community college where, since I've been studying and pursuing my degree in marketing and a minor in accounting. Because of DACA, I've had the opportunity to get the feel of what it is to be a normal college student like any of my other friends. I have been able the opportunity to continue my study, to further my education, to pursue my goal and at the end, pursue the goal that my parents had for me and my brother of becoming successful and really striving to be a better person. Now, unfortunately, because of DACA, I've had some minor setbacks. I tried to do a couple internships, one being with the police department in my city. And because of my lawful status, I wasn't granted the opportunity. After going through a rigorous summer of training and going under all the processes and qualifications that they needed, literally a week before I was able to get the position, the main manager in charge of all of it came up to me and told me that unfortunately because of my lawful status, I was not going to be able to join the CMPD internship program. You know, I'm extremely grateful for DACA. It has changed my life. I'm extremely grateful for what this country has given me. I'm extremely grateful for my parents. Over the years, I've come to just really understand the sacrifice that it took to leave everything they knew and come to a completely new country so that my brother and I could grow and become successful people and have opportunities that we know in Mexico are either extremely difficult to get or aren't available to us. And not granting a legalized or a pathway to legalized status would mean to ruin the lives of 80,000 young adults who have just lived here their whole lives and have come to know this country that they call home. So with that being said, I urge our political leaders to pass a just and compassionate legislative solution to protect us, our families, our jobs, our education, and just our continued presence here in this country.
Thank you very much for sharing your story, Jose. Operator, could you please let media on the line know how to cue to ask for questions?
Certainly. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Please limit yourself to one question. To ask a follow-up, please rejoin the queue again by pressing star 1. And we'll pause for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions.
While we wait, I'm going to take advantage that Jose is here and ask him about his faith community since he identifies as an evangelical Christian. Jose, do you belong to a church or a faith community?
Yes, ma'am. I go to Hickory Grove Baptist Church in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And do folks know about your status?
Yes. I do attend the Latin campus of Hickory Grove, and my pastor, the main pastor there, is aware. He's actually, because of him, I've had the opportunity to come here. And I'm very open about my situation because I do feel that we need to voice who we are. In order to change, we have to voice who we are. So my church knows, and they've been extremely supportive. They've always looked out for me. If any opportunities come, they let me know, especially somebody who's been my mentor, which is a pastor's son, has always looked out for me, especially his wife. They always try to find solutions and help me to be able to continue to achieve my goals and my dreams. So I love my church. I love my community. They've been extremely supportive, and they've helped me out tremendously.
Operator, do we have a question?
We do. We'll take our first question from Julie Preston from the Marshall Project.
Yes. Thank you for holding this call. I'm wondering if you have a view about whether legislation to protect the Dreamers could or should also include border security measures, additional enforcement measures inside the country in the form of funding for immigration and customs enforcement, and funding for the wall, or whether you think that it should, that would be inappropriate in terms of the family standards.
Travis, why don't you go ahead and answer the question, please?
Sure. Yeah, this is Travis. I mean, we're certainly sympathetic to the concerns about the need for additional border security. I mean, I think if you look at the rate of migration across the southern border, it certainly is down. And so I think we have to. I mean, I should point out that the things that we're already doing to secure the border seem to be working and seem to be effective. Could we do more? Certainly. I think, you know, organizationally, we don't have a formal position on, some of the sort of big ticket items in terms of border security and interior enforcement. What we're focused on and what we're concerned about is urging members of both parties to step up, to lead, and to come together for a bill that can get 60 votes in the Senate and 218 in the House.
Thanks, Travis. Operator, do we have another question?
Moving on, we'll take our next question from Emily McFarland Miller from Religion News Service.
Hi, thank you so much for sharing your stories and for having this call today. Maybe a little bit out of left field question, but I was just thinking as you guys were talking so much about, you know, how this is family is a priority for Christians and how this legislation will affect families. Thinking about the fact that we have this upcoming Christmas and Advent holiday coming up, which is a time that's supposed to be spent with family, and that's such a priority there too. I'm wondering if this makes this seem like an even more, important time to be thinking about, you know, keeping these families together and really pushing for something to happen here. Do you see that connection with the holiday and the scriptures that we read at Advent about Christmas?
Dr. Strickland, would you like to take that question?
Yes, yeah, sure. I'd love to. Thank you very much for that question. It's without doubt that anytime I think about my own holiday experience, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and the like, it's always synonymous with memories with family. And so as I spent some time with my own family over the Thanksgiving holiday, and I knew that this date, you know, today's call and also tomorrow's events were looming on the horizon, I couldn't help but hope that our actions today and tomorrow would be the catalyst for allowing people to be able to celebrate the holidays with their own families in a real way. And so, in a world where we have so many different difficult things going on, I think the holiday season, Christmas season, is definitely a time where we can sort of recenter ourselves on what's important with those familiar relationships. And I do pray and hope that our time spent together on the Hill tomorrow, and even, what results from this phone call, is a further opportunity for families to be together again at very precious times of the year, like November and December.
Thank you. And, operator, can we take the next question, please?
Certainly. Beforehand, though, I would like to remind everyone that it is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question or have a follow-up question. Moving on, we'll take our next question from Adrian St. Clair from Cronkite News, Arizona, PBS.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my question. So something that I'm curious about, there's been a lot of sort of demands from either side, whether it's the law enforcement on the people that are pushing for against kind of DACA, and then there's a lot of people that want a DREAM Act are also requesting chain migration, and I wonder if that's still kind of on the table, if people still want chain migration to be part of the DREAM Act, some sort of DREAM Act legislation.
Travis, do you want to take this one?
Sure. Chain migration or family-based migration is really a feature of the way that we do immigration preferences in this country. And so, to some extent, the discussion about so-called chain migration or family-based migration is not connected to the issue of Dreamers or to DACA recipients in any specific way, but rather has to do with the way that immigration works in this country and has worked generally over the history of this country. So, you know, I think, you know, certainly there's been a lot of discussion about that. I think what I would say is that if we want to have a broader discussion about the way that we issue visas, the way that we issue green cards in this country, I think that's fine and good and appropriate. But I think we have to be careful about how broad this discussion gets, because any of these issues that you pick up, just visa reform as an example, if you pick up one side of the stick, you have to pick up both sides. And before too long, we end up having a discussion about comprehensive immigration reform rather than a targeted solution for this special category of immigrants.
Okay, thank you.
Operator, are there any more questions?
There are none at this time, but as a final reminder, that is star one. Moving on, we'll take a follow-up from Julia Preston from the Marshall Project.
I just wanted to ask the folks from the Southern Baptist Convention. I get the impression that there's quite a bit of division within your convention over these immigration issues and perhaps over the DREAM issue. And I'm wondering if that's true, and if so, what you are doing internally to spread the position that you are arguing on the phone today?
Yeah, sure. It's a good question. And I'd be interested if Dr. Strickland, if you want to weigh in on this as well. This is Travis. We Southern Baptists like to argue about many things, and I think as you look at a number of the issues within kind of the discussion about comprehensive immigration reform, you're going to find differences of opinion. I just make maybe two points. The first is, as I mentioned earlier on the call in my remarks, in 2011, the Southern Baptist Convention issued a really strong resolution in support of a comprehensive immigration solution. Now, it was a conservative approach to comprehensive immigration, and certainly not everybody, especially on the left, is going to agree with everything that you would find in that resolution. But I think that if you look at the text of the resolution, you might be surprised by how far Southern Baptists were willing to go on this issue. So, the last time that we as a body got on the record on this issue, we were on the same page, and it wasn't that long ago, 2011, leading up to the last discussion about comprehensive immigration reform in 2013. That's the first thing I'd say. The second is we actually pulled together a letter of 50 really high level Southern Baptist leaders from across the spectrum, includes about a half dozen of the president's faith advisory council, and a number of other Southern Baptist leaders as well. And so this letter pertains specifically to the issue of Dreamers. And I think what I would say is that, while you might be right, I mean, one of the more controversial issues within the discussion about comprehensive immigration reform, I'm certain that you can find two Baptists with three opinions. But when you drill down into the specific issue that we're talking about here today, the issue of Dreamers, I think you will find broad consensus among Southern Baptists that we do need to do something about this. And there's broad support that Congress needs to take action to solve this.
Yeah, this is Walter Strickland. I'd love to just follow up just very briefly because Travis did a fantastic job with that. But I think it's surprising, especially as Travis mentioned, on this particular, this unique subset of immigrants, Dreamers, just how many Christians you'll find who are in support of Congress taking legislative action. I mean, polls have shown that upwards of 70% of evangelicals are positive towards making a long-term solution for Dreamers. And as far as the idea or the question, the portion of the question that relates to how are we sort of perpetuating the position that we're sort of advocating for today amongst Southern Baptists, as a seminary professor as well, as the first vice president of the convention, just being able to walk through Scripture with students who are going to be the future leaders of our convention, pastors, denominational leaders, missionaries alike, it's been fascinating for us to talk about God's heart and His compassion for the foreigner, sojourner, and immigrant. Being able to see that thread throughout the entirety of the Scripture, but then also seeing the Christian as a person who is sort of a sojourner through life in this world as well, whose home is with the Lord in the kingdom. And so really just being able to have those conversations in this particular time in our history, it raises these questions to a place where we can actually talk about them explicitly, perhaps for the first time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Strickland. Operator, are there any more questions?
There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Kathleen Farrell again for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. And we'd especially like to thank our speakers, Travis Wutho, Walter Strickland, and Jose Ocampo. We will be sending around a recording of this call later today. Enjoy the rest of your day.
And that will conclude today's conference. We do thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.